picked up some Annie Dillard, which led me to thinking about existentialism. So Annie Dillard, from her book Holy the Firm, says, "There were no formerly heroic times, and there was no formerly pure generation. There is no one here but us chickens, and so it has always been. A people busy and powerful, knowledgeable, ambivalent, important, fearful, and self-aware. A people who scheme, promote, deceive, and conquer, who pray for their loved ones and long to flee misery and escape death. It is a weakening and discoloring idea that rustic people knew God personally once upon a time, or even knew selflessness or courage or literature, but that it's too late for us. In fact, the absolute is available to everyone in every age. There never was a more holy age than ours, and never a less." Existential angst is when we experience anxiety over the fact that living takes hard work and emotional labor, and we know that there are the means to feeling productive and motivated and happy, but the whole time we also know that it will end. And so it causes us dread and anxiety about inevitable death. To be human is to have existential angst. There are many ways to handle the duality of enjoying life while knowing it will end. Religion and philosophy is one area. When I was studying philosophy in college, I started down a road of investing in existentialism as if it itself was a religion. I especially loved Kierkegaard because he believed so deeply in the power of love. All these years later, I find that holding existentialist thoughts about time is helpful in keeping regulated, especially during times of increased national or global anxiety. Existentialism is, in a nutshell, the means of teaching us that nothing exists until it's over. While it's happening, we're simply in the process of becoming, not yet existing. We hear this duality of time expressed in the understanding of time being both sacred and secular. Think about some of the phrases that get tossed around or got tossed around. For instance, years ago, United Church of Christ, UCC, which is the Main Street religion, UCC had a slogan several years ago speaking to the idea that our time is not the same as God's time. Their slogan was, "Don't put a period where God has put a comma." It showed their progressive theology. Another place you might find this duality of sacred and secular time is if you study process theology. One learns that God is in a state of becoming, just as we are. Time passage is a great reason to look at existentialism. Also, it's fun to bring it up and see who manages to make it to church that Sunday. Existentialism seems like this really big idea. It's not. See, humans are concerned with time, how time passes, what we do with the time we are given, and we like to understand how long something will take or how long we should consider something to be relevant. Relevance after death is a concern for many. Thus, it stands to reason that our thoughts on death will have relevance for how we spend our time here. When all of the news is bad, I like to remember that time is a human construct and that different civilizations have understood it very differently, and so can I, and so can we. 50 years ago, the modern world became aware of the Terracotta Army of China. 50 years ago, two workers digging a well for water hit something hard where there should not have been anything but loose soil, and the rest is excavated history. Emperor Qin, the first emperor of China, became king at 13 years old, about 250 years before the birth of Jesus. He began the construction of his burial grounds upon becoming king. Now, think about that. We are told as ministers that the first thing you do when you get a new job is update your resume. Based on what, Emperor Qin? He began the construction of his burial grounds right when he became king. For at least the next 12 years, using over 700,000 workers in an area covering unfathomable measurements, several square miles, there are terracotta soldiers completely sculpted, each face differently, on their horses, and each horse is unique. All done to commemorate China's first emperor, who was only a boy. A little background on the emperor. He united China. He built the Great Wall. We'll hear more about him later. He definitely lived up to his own self-importance. Author Annie Dillard writes of her experience of seeing the soldiers in 1982. Quote, "There is at least this one extraordinary distinction of our generation, for it is in our lifetimes alone that people can witness the unearthing of the deep-dwelling army of Emperor Qin, the 7,000 or 10,000 soldiers, their real crossbows and swords, their horses and chariots in some case. Seeing the open pits in the open air among farms is the wonder, and seeing the bodies twist free from the soil. The sight of a cleaned clay soldier upright in a museum case is unremarkable, and this is all that future generations will see. No one will display these men crushed beyond repair. No one will display their loose parts. No one will display them crawling from the walls. Future generations will miss the crucial sight of ourselves as rammed earth." In Annie Dillard's book, For the Time Being, she shares her account of seeing them in 1982 as they were still being excavated. They looked to be swimming through the sand, half still covered. One gets a feeling for how very small and insignificant each person is, despite the fact of the emperor's own inflated self-importance. It is safe to say that nobody currently living on Earth will have a send-off like Emperor Qin did. It is also safe to surmise how very different we understand time now from how ancients used to understand time. Starting a project that might not be complete in your lifetime? I mean, don't we all think about who's going to get all of our stuff? That's different. Starting a project that's going to go on beyond us. For most of us modern folks now, it's hard to even recall a decade. Can you imagine? What were you doing 12 years ago? It took 12 years of building this. 12 years. What were you doing? Can you imagine somebody saying to you, okay, so we're going to clear several square miles and construct somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 soldiers so that whenever this politician, or maybe he was seen as a deity, however we might view an emperor, dies, when that happens, the army is going to protect him in his afterlife. It will take 12 years to complete, but our beloved emperor will be safe forever. Our modern minds cannot imagine time in such a way. Maybe not the scope of dedication either. Dillard writes, "The well diggers scraped away the dirt, then looked down the well hole at an unblinking human face. The area now under excavation is larger than most American counties." It made me think of the pyramids of Egypt and how we could ever possibly grasp the concept of erecting such a monument to greatness and to afterlife, let alone carry through with it. They think the pyramids took 20 years to build. 20 years ago. I certainly could not imagine particular elements of life then, which are common now. What were you doing 20 years ago? The pyramids, another guardian of a different civilization's afterlife, took 100,000 slaves 20 years to complete. It's very interesting to compare our own modern human lives in 12 or 20 or 40 year increments in view of accomplishments such as those. Technology makes building easier and faster in these modern times, but the point is not how long something will take, but how worthy it is of that time spent. How do we spend our time? How concerned are we with being, with living? How do we use our time when we are just being? Existentialism teaches us that everything is in a constant state of becoming. We cannot say that something exists until it's over, because until then, it is still in a changeable process. At what point did somebody declare any of those jobs, the soldiers or the pyramids? When did they declare them done? Until somebody declares a piece of art finished, it is still becoming. And our lives are like that too. I think this is why the thought of afterlife is important in so many religions and to so many individuals, not all of them, but to many. If we never truly cease to exist, it calms our fear of death. Annie Dillard pointed out that Confucius wept. Confucius, when he understood that he would soon die, wept. There's a biblical passage that's the shortest passage in the Bible that says Jesus wept. The sheer magnitude of these ancient projects overwhelm me. The difference between ancient understanding of time and our current state of calling you in here to start promptly at 10:30 has always interested me. I recall a sermon I delivered once that got me in some trouble. Back in the day, I had to have a conversation with my internship committee about it. I said that it really didn't matter when Jesus was born, in which season, whether it was in December around Saturnalia or in April around Passover, because the facts were not as important as how we commemorate the life. I said that Jesus himself would not have been aware that his birthday was on December 25th because time itself was measured in seasons, not in days, certainly not in moments or minutes. Somebody took my words to mean that I had said facts don't matter, which is not what I said or meant. We want facts in this modern world, and historical certainty is not always possible. Religious life, theological study, and certainly sitting with philosophy like existentialism all requires us to sit with nuance. We need to build into the study that most everything in our life will be a best guess, not a fact. We wish we had certainty about, say, afterlife, but often we choose which belief to follow, which may inform our choice of which house of worship to attend. There's a corollary between the houses of worship we construct to be meeting places for people to exist until they do not, so that we have a place to honor their passage. A corollary between that and the tremendous projects like the pyramids or the 10,000 soldiers. In constructing these houses of God, or however we see it, we are also safeguarding our own eternities. Each of us is very important and very insignificant at the same time. A beautiful celebration of life is what we do, just as a monument is built. In that regard, we are all important. Not every person who dies is going to get a pyramid or an army. So in that respect, our individualism is insignificant. For all of these great monuments, the fact remains that Qin and the pharaohs were still claimed by death, regardless of monuments. Religion is just one place that we can reconcile, living fully while knowing it will end. But in speaking of an afterlife, how does one speak of time? If we cannot even imagine 2,000 years, how do you ponder eternity? And more interesting to me is looking backwards at time. If we can date early Christianity to about 2,000 years, and early Judaism another couple thousand years before that, these beliefs flourished amid many other world religions too. When we write about or read about guardians of the afterlife, we're thinking about what we believe today. All through time, people have believed in something otherworldly, either a nature that is too big to understand, or something, somebody, supernatural. And this is where nuance helps us to abandon the need for fact. It helps us to believe that the limited knowledge we have of life is not the whole picture. There must be something more, right? Maybe someone who is more than merely human, a god or a goddess, or in some cases we have even elevated a human to deity level. In doing so, we have all been concerned with our time, not with what came before, still uncertain of what is to come, and all we can do is concern ourselves with right now. Annie Dillard, while not an existentialist, captures the theme of existential dread well in writing about the Terracotta Soldiers. I commend to you to pick up some Annie Dillard. Each generation thinks it is the greatest. Each person is important and insignificant. Each religion promises some way to cheat the nothingness that waits for us upon death. Are you thinking, what does you promise? You use cheat nothingness by living lives that leave memories of us inside the hearts and minds of other people. Yes, sometimes there are plaques too, but that is how we make sure that we each have an afterlife, by sharing love during this life. Every ruler did great things. Qin united China, built the Great Wall, built irrigation systems and roads, promoted literature and art and math. But he also slaughtered thousands, maybe millions, of people who he disapproved of. These included scholars and people who were interested in books. That's short-sighted. How are we going to read about him, right? He burned books and buried people alive. All of that is true, and yet here we are in this century, in this decade, knowing about his army who was intended to guard his afterlife. Every time in human history has had greatness and futility, while each life has also had greatness and futility. Humans cannot help but to ponder our being, and so then ponder the time when being ceases. These are the great reflections that we do. Some erect pyramids to be sure they're remembered. Some want 10,000 soldiers to take along. And some of us just want to know that our legacy of love will remain. Existentialism thought offers us possibilities and chances to keep going. Change is inevitable right up until it's done. We can always live however we want to, changing as we need to, if we understand this basic premise. So when we think about the legacy we wish to leave, it need not be pyramids, it need not be clay armies. Love is quite enough in its becoming and in its existing.